Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, Taryn's back to give you deeds again. He's digging deep on Survivor to find you everything you need. So if your life is packed, let Taryn and his friends break down the episode beyond what the casual see.
Taryn's update for Survivor.
And welcome to our Survivor update for Survivor 40, Winners at War. It's week two, and I am your host, Taryn Armstrong, and I have brought with me a lovely guest. It's Brayden. Brayden, I watched you on Sequester season three, which is a show, an internet show made by Audrey Middleton, who is on Big Brother. And I very much enjoyed you on Sequester, Brayden.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. I enjoyed hearing you and, Brent just break us down and destroy everyone on our cast.
Are you ready to do that to the greatest Survivor players of all time?
Yes, exactly. I'm totally in a place where I am allowed to judge them on their gameplay.
Yes. Well, here we go. You guys seem to like the first one, so we're back. We're going to keep updating the Survivor stuff. I've got some fun legacy watch coverage that we're going to do at the end of the podcast. I got some opinions from the audience as to where the winners stack up in terms of legacy tiers. And I got to say, we were pretty close, I think. The audience mostly agreed with us. Just a couple of small tweaks, really, in that first episode. And I think we kind of nailed it.
Interesting. And I feel like some legacies will maybe be adjusted after this episode, too.
Yes, there was some movement.
Some rough moves out there.
Yeah. All right. So let's start to talk about what happened in this episode. We like to go in detail and scene by scene and really pick these things apart because what else? I'm a robot. That's what I do. I like to just overanalyze things as much as possible. So we started off at the edge of extinction. And Amber was arriving or there already, I guess, and she was very upset, very unhappy that she was there. But she said it would be much worse without the Edge of Extinction. Amber was apparently one of the very few people who in the previous tribal council had been like, no, yeah. I don't mind extinction. And so they're really milking that, getting as much out of it as they can from one of the few people on the cast that seems to enjoy it.
Yeah. And I don't know if she would have known going in there that she could maybe like be helping Rob out or like be basically an assist to someone else's win. But I mean, it's a big thing to be there when obviously advantages are flowing back and forth.
I listened to the know-it-alls last night and they were talking about Russell Hance being in the chat. I think that we might have Russell Hance in the chat right now. And he said, I've never seen Taryn's face, only heard his voice. Recap legend. This is the real Russell. Then thank you very much, Russell Hance.
Russell Hance. Oh, hey, Russell. We used to talk sometime. You know, my good friend, Cody Thrive.
So there you go. Thanks for checking us out. I'm hearing the audio is maybe a little bit uneven, so I'm going to work to try to fix that. Just let me know as we go in the chat and I'll turn myself down and we'll try to even it out as much as possible. So yes, Amber on extinction and she has of course bequeathed her fire token to Russell Hance's good friend Boston Rob. Rob immediately knows this is not good. I don't like this. I don't like that that I am and being bequeathed something right now.
Yeah, and they cut when they cut to him and he does the whole scene of, you know, this could not be good, like it might be Amba. Then he thinks it might be, maybe it's Sandra. I don't know. I'm just, the whole time I'm like, Sandra wouldn't give you that. She wouldn't want to give that advantage to you.
Yeah, well, he goes and he tells Parvati. I love this, that like Parvati is like the person he goes to, and it's Rob and Parvati like just talking through that he just lost his wife in the game. Like, I just love that these two are working together and they have scenes like this. And so, yeah, he's like, hey, maybe it was Sandra. We just spent 39 days together. No, not quite. But he does say, you know, I don't know, but I don't know if I can trust Sandra. If it was her, this is war.
Well, I mean, it's the name of the season, so might as well get the word war in there a few more times.
Of course. You know, it really feels like we're being set up for Rob versus Sandra at some point, right?
Yeah, Rob versus Sandra. And then, you know, later on, not to jump too much, but maybe Rob versus Adam and some other new schoolers, too. But
definitely.
I'm still honestly like it's just makes me happy to see, you know, the Robs and Sandras are still there on the, you know, even after two vote outs, so that you can still have that type of vitriol and like big players playing against each other.
Yeah. Was it a mistake to put Rob and Amber on separate tribes? Because now that Amber's been voted out, Rob had the emotional reaction, but he had nobody to rail against right now. If they had been on the same tribe and Amber had been voted out, then he'd be going on a warpath right now, right? I feel like if he does eventually go on a warpath, it'll be a little more toned down.
Yeah, but I think the producers probably made the right choice, just that if Rob and Amber are together on their first tribe, they are the first target. Like, there's no doubt. At least this way, maybe they hide behind other large targets. So I think, I mean, that was probably a production decision where they're not looking down the line. They're looking at day one or day two on the beach.
So we then get to Ben and Denise, and they're out on an idol hunt. Ben is really trying to work on, you know, his social game. That the last time he was out here, infamously, he was very good at finding idols and not super great at the social game, at least from like the final seven forward. And so he's really trying to prove that, like, hey, I'm more than just a one trick pony. And I actually kind of liked this strategy where he says, look, I'm really good at one thing, and that's finding idols. So what if I tried to use that one thing that I'm really good at and translate it somehow to something I'm not as good at, which is building social relationships? So he's like, I will help you, Denise. I'll teach you how to find idols. And then, you know, what we see is that Denise finds an idol with the help of Ben. She even says to us in confessional, without Ben, I would not have found this. What do you think of this strategy from Ben?
I thought it was awesome. I think people rail against Ben, and I think maybe, you know, his legacy over the season might increase, because that's smart. Like, if people know he's the idol finder, he should use that to try to make friends. Like, people know he's kind of a silly dude, and I think he's being discounted as like a wild card, and it's kind of allowing him to, like, you see him in scenes with the new school people and the old school people. So, like, yeah, I think it was a great move. And then obviously, I mean, then Denise finds it, and then I don't know what he was doing after that, but that's kind of the next scene.
I do also like that we're kind of confirming here, because look, I've never been one for conspiracy theories, especially about like idols being planted, but there are a lot of people that feel like Ben's idols were perhaps unearned, that they were basically handed to him. But I think we're getting at least some confirmation here, right, that Ben actually is very good at finding these things, that he really did help Denise find this, and he's giving advice that people otherwise wouldn't be aware of.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Or, you know, the other side of it is they just tried to plant it for Ben. And
then, or they've already told Ben where it was so that he could tell Denise how to find it. That's definitely what's happening.
All right, Ben, choose who you want to bring with you. So it's going to be a two-person, two-half idol. Just don't mess it up. Get half of it.
Yeah. So Denise finds it and it's not a strict idol. It's two halves of an idol. She needs to give the other half to another player or it doesn't do anything. And then it's, sort of like what happened with Ty, when he had half of an idol, both players have to like agree to bring it together and then they can play it, at will. And so. You would think they found it together, as you pointed out, that she would share this with Ben, but Ben is basically saying like, no, I'm doubling down on this strategy here. I helped you find the idol because I didn't really care about having one. So I'm going to go the additional step further by saying, let's use this to bring somebody else in with us as well. And he even suggests, Denise suggests Adam, and Ben thinks that's a great idea. He says he can help us maneuver. This really seems to tie back into what we saw from him in the first episode when he gave Adam the heads up that the vote might be falling on him. He said that Adam was a smart guy and that he felt he could help him in the game. I pointed out then that they have met before, hung out a little bit before that I was there for. So I know that there's at least a little bit of connection there. And I think that that Ben is kind of banking on that. Seems that Adam is not quite as much, however. But Ben is really trying to bring Adam in with him somewhere. It's not very reciprocated.
Yeah, I think Ben like kind of shoots himself in the foot there. Like, you should have just said, hey, can I have the other half? Because I helped you half find it. And then we can tell Adam. That way he's actually, you know, important to the decision-making or use of that idol. But now he's just the third person that knows about an idol that two people hold. Like, he's probably very dangerous, more dangerous to Adam and Denise than he was before.
Yeah. Russell Hans in the chat says, I want to do an Easter egg hunt versus Ben. Make that happen. I really enjoy Russell Hans in the chat. all right, so Denise goes and tells Adam that she found this weird version of an idol. He's like, oh yes, this is so good, nobody else knows, right? And she's like, oh well, I mean, Ben knows, he was with me. He's like, no. He's like, and he starts telling us Ben is a wild card. But he doesn't trust Ben. He doesn't think he can work with Ben very well. And so he does not like that Ben knows about this. And then things get worse because Denise says that her plan was, I was thinking about giving it to Parvati. That if I give it to Parvati, I don't know. They didn't really give us her explanation as to why. Although I have read some things from Gordon Holmes in the previous episode that apparently there was maybe some chatter that was overheard at some point that indicated that Parvati and Denise did have some kind of relationship in the tribe in the early days, and that they were talking about some of the connections that they held with the other tribe, members of the other tribe. And so it seems like there was a potential connection here, alliance here, that either gets shut down by Adam in this moment or continues to just kind of be on the down low in terms of being shown in the edit.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of unsure about that because I read that article too, and just like maybe Parvati and Denise had something earlier, and then Denise thinks, okay, this is how we really pull Parvati in. If she's trying to do the old school thing, you know, now I can be on the in with her. But I think Adam was right to just say, like, have you seen like the history of Parvati and idols? Maybe not the best move.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying Winners at War Adam here. His immediate response is just, I think that's a terrible idea. No. And then he tells us, luckily I was able to convince her, no, not Parvati, give it to me. And so Adam is going to receive that. I think he's completely right here that you do, especially with Parvati's history of idols being given to her and Russell Hans, that maybe don't do the same thing that JT kind of almost did a little bit. This maybe not the best idea. And I know that JT gave it to Russell and not Parvati, but they were aligned. He just didn't know it. So Adam is able to convince her not to do it. Are you Parvati's number one? No, then this is not a good idea. Then we get to the other tribe and we're hearing from Yule, who is currently on a breadfruit hunt. This was a secret scene from last week that they were trying to get breadfruits with a large pole, but it seems that Yule has now upgraded. He's attached a loop of rope at the end of his pole so that he can pull the breadfruit down. I do have an update in terms of analysis for what Yule is doing that right after we did the last podcast, where I speculated about Yule's intentions with the previous vote. He came out and gave a lengthy description on Twitter about all of the things that were going through his head through that vote out. And I was like, no, I was so close. I was almost right, but I was completely wrong. But basically, I had theorized, based on what I had seen in the edit, that Yule was trying to set Tyson up as somebody to pull in, to essentially grooming Tyson to pull him in to flip against Sandra, Tony, and Sarah. It seems as though he was doing that, but not with Tyson, with Kim. That Kim was the person he was trying to bring in. That's why he had he put his hand on her shoulder, and they have sort of tried to develop that relationship a bit. Look, I tried. I was close.
You Tyson stands, like, you know.
Hey, I had reason to think it.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think it's really just, you know, you take out one of their close allies or perceive close allies, Amber, and then try to just pull one in for that extra number, but just the wrong one. So sad.
Yeah.
And there he was, like, that scene too, it was just him and Kim to start. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like, it was a segue scene, but I was kind of just like, oh, Yule and Kim, here they are right after that vote out.
I will also say, quite frankly, if Yule hadn't posted that, based on the edit, I would still feel like Tyson is the more likely recipient of being dragged into that alliance based on what we hear Sophie say about Kim. So I do feel like the edit was pointing in one direction, even though the game seems to be going in the other.
Is that that tweet longer thing or whatever it was, mm-hmm. is it still up or did he have to?
It is still up. So Yule had continued to express, to talk about some things. But apparently at some point, he was told, stop doing this. And so he has since deleted, any further explanations for his thought process and will no longer be doing so for the rest of the season.
Release the Yule edit. Give us the full thing. Come on.
So that's going on with Yule. And then Kim starts talking to us about how, once again, it is very strange having to play from the bottom. She's not used to it. And, she's just trying to find her footing. I really loved what she talked about in terms of being on the bottom and what that means for your game, that it's essentially this downward spiral of you're at the bottom, you try to claw your way up, but the more you try to claw your way up, the more people think you're dangerous and try to put you at the bottom. It's like being in quicksand or something. Like, the more you struggle, the worse it gets for you. So it's very difficult to get out of this position. Kim is a very insightful player, and, for her to be able to recognize that very quickly, being in that position, I thought was really cool. And the way that she articulated it, I thought was very insightful.
Yeah. And I don't know if I totally agree with it, but, you know, you see, like, people like the Three Amigos, or, you know, sometimes there's people at the bottom that they just try to get out over and over and over. But I think, like, the players that she's playing with, you know, it's not one world where it's just going to be, you know, big alliances taking out people one by one. Like, they look for free agents and look for people that are alone. So I don't know, but then she finds, of course, her little clue.
Yes, she says that when she goes idol hunting, she tries to get a vibe of where the idol is. She just kind of, like, follows the voices in her head. It's like a prayer of sorts, she says. I don't know what she was talking about here. I was very confused.
I feel like, you know, they asked her a question of, like, okay, well, how did you go about, what was your process? And she probably was just like, I don't know, I just, like, poked around. And then they're like, make it more exciting. I followed the vibes for Caitlin, like very Caitlin Herman esque. I thought
very much so. Yeah, you know, she's love and light, following it.
The aura. What do you think the aura of that that idol was? It must have been a blue for sure.
I mean, wouldn't it be red?
Oh,
the red tribe.
Oh yeah. Okay. It's a decal type of vibe, you know.
Yeah. So she finds an idol, disappointed though to realize it is not a full idol. She will have to share it with somebody. She does hide it from Tony and Nick as they come up, which does give us a little, at least a little bit of insight onto where she's at. She says that when Tony and Nick come up, she doesn't like it because those are two people she completely does not trust. So that obviously makes sense for Tony, but interesting to hear about Nick that he is not somebody that Kim finds trustworthy in the game. But apparently she finds Sophie and potentially Yule maybe a little bit trustworthy.
Yeah, and it makes me think that like maybe Sophie and Yule are actually doing, and Nick and Wendell are doing a better job than we might see of hiding the fact that they're together. Because for her to not equate, you know, Nick to Sophie is pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. So she eventually decides she's going to approach Sophie and give Sophie half of the idol. I love that Sophie, in contrast to when Yule invited her to work with him and she was so taken aback, like, Yule, when Kim pulls her aside, she's like, is this what I think it is? Kim's like, yeah, I think so. And so Kim gives Sophie half of the idol, and Sophie then tells us she should not be doing this. She should be giving Tyson the idol. I am the last person she should be giving this idol to. She says that Kim is incredibly socially adept. She's like, she could be the nicest Texan in the world, but that is not going to do her any favors here. And she should not be telling the devil about her idol. This is gonna backfire.
Yeah, I guess, you know, Sophie's just another. It was interesting for me, like, Tyson must have done a good job at the last tribal of just really showing he didn't want to be with Kim, because they were on the out. I bet Tyson's watching this, was watching that too, and was like, damn, you should have told me about the idol.
Well, that is a good sort of question to look at. Is this the right move for Kim? She has a choice here. She can either go with Tyson, who is theoretically more trustworthy just because he's with her, and therefore more likely to give the piece, the half of the idol to use for at least one of them in the case that either of them might be in danger. Or she has the ability to just kind of reach out to somebody else in the tribe and try to make some kind of connection with them, similar to what Ben is trying to do on the other tribe. But where Ben, we got a confessional from Denise saying this made me trust Ben even more. It seems as though Kim's results are the opposite, where we hear from Sophie saying this was a terrible mistake. Similar move, but very different outcomes, it seems.
Yeah, and I mean, Sophie, they talk about their last seasons, though, too. And Sophie says, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, even if I feel amazing about the way Kim says she trusts me, it's like she says, like, I know her gameplay. I know that she's just so good. So I just can't. It's like at default, you can trust maybe like a Ben or Denise from that face value. But she's saying, like, it doesn't matter at all. For me, like, Kim can do anything and I don't trust her.
Right. Which is so interesting to me. And I tweeted about this during the episode that I do think this is an interesting point that Kim, like, when you talk about Ben's strength, he's very good at finding idols. That's mostly it. When you talk about Kim's strength, she's very, very good socially. She was very good at just disarming people, at making people trust her. But when you have an entire season of winners, most of whom are also very good socially and also know her by her reputation as somebody that is very disarming and makes you trust her, it's almost like her strength is more easily nullified in a season like this than another player's strengths might be, where we're seeing Boston Rob seemingly succeed quite a bit in a cast full of winners. We're seeing Kim completely fall short. And it's interesting because people often compare Redemption Island to One World in terms of the dominating games. But I think that the subtleties, subtle differences between those games is really showing up here in Winners at War.
Yeah, and I think, I kind of think it has to do with the tribes and like the people on those tribes. But Kim just, man, what a tough spot to be in. And at least she's got half an idol now, but I don't know if she'll ever be able to play it. And actually, I have a question. I don't know if anyone's asked this. Is like, I'm sure they have. I just haven't been on Twitter today. Can they use the other half of that other idol on the other camp? Or are these specifically like one size fits one size and you can't get the other half from the other guy?
I have seen some speculation about that, but I don't think we have an answer. I think that, you know, going by the rule of if it makes good TV, go for it, then it should. They should be able to combine those. I think that would be very interesting. You know, imagine, you know, somebody going into tribal thinking, I'm going to hold this back from this person. They're going to be so betrayed, but they're going home. And then they look to that person. They're like, sorry. And then they go, okay. And they look to another person and they're like, sorry. Like, that would be great. So I think that would be cool. I hope it's the case.
Yeah. I mean, they weren't really clear on it, but they looked like I couldn't really see Kim's as well, but they looked similar to me. So who knows?
So we go back to the Edge of Extinction, and it's just more scavenger hunts. Really, like, there's not a lot to talk about here. I think I talked about this a little bit. Obviously, anybody new to this podcast won't have been watching my Twitch streams when I talked about the previous season, but I really feel like Edge of Extinction, it should be more social. That's the point of Survivor is that there are certainly physical aspects. There are scavenger hunt aspects, but Edge of Extinction is just purely scavenger hunt, it seems. And there's almost no social sort of thing here. My favorite parts of the previous Extinction Island segments on the Extinction Island season, or Edge of Extinction, whatever you want to call it, were the parts where like the people on Edge had to like betray each other to like figure out, like find the thing first or like compete to get the thing. Those were the best parts for me. And when it's just kind of like, let's just go on a walk and then one of us will eventually spot it, it's just like,
I think maybe it's more like prisoner type games or something where, right, you know, the two people have to choose, you know, out of four people who they give it to or something. If they both chose opposite, that goes to no one or something. Yeah, it's just something more social or interesting. And of course, I don't think that they ever actually realized that the first letter in each row said water well. It just, no. Like, I'm sure Natalie watching now is like, oh, so that's what that clue meant. She just probably found it at the water well.
Yeah.
There was no confessional of her like having the aha moment, which I love.
Well, we get the scintillating television of, we walked to the rice bucket, we searched the rice bucket, we searched around the rice bucket, couldn't find anything. But Natalie does eventually find it in the water well, and it is going to be a safety power. And this power allows you to basically, I don't know if there's a specific time period. I think it might be right before the votes are read. But basically, at Tribal, you get to stand up and be like, all right, guys, I'm out.
I'm going to head out.
See you later.
Have we had this before? Because I feel like if we did, I missed it.
I think we've had like, you know, if you get sent to exile or something, then you'll miss the tribal and you won't have a vote, but you'll also be safe. I think something similar to that, but not, I don't think there's been anything where you're just like, all right, I'm going to just head out. Like, do you get to actually take a boat by yourself back to, or whatever transportation method they have, back to camp by yourself? Or do you just wait outside for them to come walk with you?
Bring them to the shack, you know, that Sandra and Rob hang out with. And then they can give commentary from behind their spy shack.
Mm. Well, of course, Jeremy is going to be the recipient of this power. Natalie says that, you know, like, oh, this is purely based on who I know has more tokens, which I like. theoretically fair. She knows Jeremy has those, or at least it's more likely that Jeremy has those tokens because she knows she bequeathed one of them to him. But also, like, you want to just give it to Jeremy, right? Like, it's fine. That's fine. Like, it's a good thing to do to give your allies powers.
When she started saying that, I was like, oh, she's going to give it to Rob because she knows Amber obviously gave her token to Rob, and that's the most recent bequeathment.
So, exactly. Like, theoretically, Jeremy could have already spent his two tokens on a challenge advantage or a tarp, whereas you know Rob just got one. So if that really was the pure motive, then I probably would have gone to Rob. But it's fine. You send it to your ally. That's what you should do. Mm-hmm. Probably.
And speaking of, like, I like was thinking about this today, that does it always make sense to keep, you know, the ally in and with these advantages, or does it make sense to give it to someone that's just like a really big target that you want to have in the game by the time you make it back? Like, you know, because if she comes back and Jeremy's still there, then I think the logic still stands that Jeremy and her are a tight blood pair and they should be voted out and separated. I don't know. Like, I almost think that there is some logic to giving it to just, like, Boston Rob.
And I saying, think there can be, yeah.
Let's keep Rob in there and just keep a giant target with some advantages so that he's, you know, a huge threat. But safe route. Obviously, she's going to do Jeremy.
I think that's a better strategy in the second half of the game. Post-merge, where, you know, there are only a few more tribals left that you have to survive, like having a big target in to distract away from you is good in that sense. But I think so early in the game, you want to come back to some allies. I think that would be the best way forward. If you come back and there's a bigger target than you, then they still have like 10 tribals to get you out after taking out that target, right? So
fair enough. When do they know, when are they going to re-enter this time? Is it, do we know, or is it?
I don't know, personally.
Unknown? Okay. Yeah.
We could probably make some educated guesses, but.
Yeah, I mean, so that segment was that segment. I wrote like one word, water well and annoying.
Yeah. Well, Jeremy receives the power. He is going to, of course, purchase it. He says he feels at the bottom of the tribe. And you know what? This is a war. And I lost the first battle, but I'm not out of it yet. And now he knows the true value of the fire tokens. I've heard a lot of talk still about, like, what's the best strategy with fire tokens? How do we feel about fire tokens? Again, I feel like still so far, it's just been very simple. It's just been one fire token for one advantage given by somebody at Extinction. Or you can pool tokens to buy advantages or tarps or whatever. And it seems like for the most part here, most people are going to want to keep their tokens on the off chance that they are going to be able to pick up some kind of advantage from Extinction. I assume that there's going to be some more complicated stuff that comes into play in the future, and I look forward to analyzing that. But for now, it's pretty simple, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there could be some fun. Like, if you had someone trying to be villainous, just trying to maybe get, like, if I was a Boston Rob or someone and I had slight control, I'd try to convince everyone, like, hey, you guys should pull together your four tokens so we can get a tarp. Some shit like that. Just to, like, you know, make everyone lose all their tokens buying useless stuff so that advantages can't be flooded into the game. But I'm sure producers would really not like that. They want every idol. And I guess a question I had, I don't know if they said it or if I missed it, was like, could Natalie have sent that advantage and asked for $2? And then what?
Right.
What happens then? Or sorry, two tokens.
Yeah. I mean, I think she should be able to, right? Like, especially considering all the lessons we learned from Island of the Idols about bartering. So I mean, I feel like that should be a rule if we're going to do this sort of bartering system, but it doesn't seem like that's the case. It seems like there are set prices.
Because I'd be like, if that was allowed, I would start as a, you know, person on Extinction being worried that, okay, maybe there's like an auction or something down the line, and getting into the game requires the most tokens, you know, that who's able to bet the most.
Exactly. And it would also, like, actually make it a dilemma when you're sent an advantage. Is this advantage worth the amount of tokens I will spend on it, because what if a better one comes along, but it's at a higher price? Whereas right now it just seems like just one token, one advantage. So as long as you've got two, then you can easily buy one.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll find out soon enough. Like, I'm sure there'll be some advantage that someone sends for $2 or $3.
I hope so. I think there's a lot of potential for this concept. It just hasn't quite been used yet, but we'll see.
I honestly, like, other than it taking up time from pure strategy, I like the idea of adding something that's just not so random, like that there's bartering or that there's an ability to use currency. I think it can add some interesting elements.
Yeah, I really like the split idols, and I like the fire tokens. And I don't always hate Edge of Extinction. I think it's just that, like, all of those things in the same episode, it's really starts to take up time. And like, when you have what is possibly the best cast in the history of reality television, like, we want to see them doing things, interacting, not just like going on walks and finding advantages. Like, we want to see them actually play the game a little bit. For me, at least, that's how I feel.
Yeah. I mean, so we've seen no strategy at this point in the episode, except for, I guess, Adam and Denise deciding who they'll give
the advantage to. Advantage to.
Yeah. That's not great.
Yeah. So we do get what was probably honestly my favorite segment of the episode, or at least close to it. Tony's ladder. Tony says that I need something to occupy my mind so I don't start going crazy and doing crazy things like going and looking for idols and getting in trouble. And so I need to, I guess, make a ladder. It's a simple ladder, simple process. You simply climb the ladder. You simply grab the fruits. You simply throw it down. Very simple. I love that Tony is still here. I want him to stay for as long as possible. And I hate that him and Tyson seem to be at odds, because I think they're two of the best characters on the Survivor of all time. And I really want them to both stay in as long as possible. But yes, Tony has made the ladder. And Tyson is wondering, like, I don't think there's a ladder clause in the contract we signed here.
That was my favorite. I mean, like, everything Tyson says is gold. I'm sure he just rails in those interviews, like 20 things, and the producers are like, yep, we're gonna use this is good, because he's so funny, like, and so quick. And what else do you say? He's like, this guy enforces the laws back home. Oh my god, and now he just thinks he's an engineer.
Yeah. how is he still alive?
I mean, I can't imagine, like, you look at, like, what you think a cop would be like, a policeman or whatever it is in America, or an RCMP. And, like, Sarah is what I imagine. Tony's like the scary guy that maybe comes in, like, undercover on, like, special ops, and he's like, run around and, like, bring down criminals, like, vigilante style. He just scares me sometimes. But we get that awesome scene, and everyone's, ooh, that was loud. Everyone's there, like the whole tribe is in on it, because I'm sure they love it too. Like, it's probably not exciting out there other than, you know, Tyson making jokes and Tony doing weird things.
I really just love the concept that, like, if Tony is not doing this, then he would just be unable to prevent himself from running around finding idols and building spy shacks. So he needs to do this in order to stay calm. Like, this is calm Tony.
You should just go for a swim, or, I mean, I guess in the preview, you'll see him go for a swim.
Right. Like, that's what happens when he goes for a swim.
Yeah, exactly. Play a game. Like, Boston Rob seems to have some games set up at his camp, so maybe Tony needs to get some games together.
We also hear from Sophie that Tony is like a kid when you're watching a kid play make-believe, and then you slowly start to realize that this is not make-believe for the kid, it's real. That was great.
Yeah. No, Sophie's getting the content that I think Sophie deserves, because she's really funny too, but sometimes I think, like, I was worried Sophie would get lost in the edit these early episodes. But, you know, Tony being Tony gives us basically the best segment, solidifies his, you know, craziness, legend status, and, like, I feel like they'll do a package of Tony every episode if they can.
Yes. So we get the funny stuff from Tony, and then we also get the strategic stuff, which is also funny from Tony, because he is going to propose to Sarah. He's going to say, hey, look, last time we had an alliance called Cops R Us. I know that I voted you out and I ended up winning and you lost. But what do you say we do it again? And this time I promise I'm not going to do that.
You know, he's like, why don't we hang out more, Sarah? Like, because everyone will think we're in an alliance together, obviously. So Sarah was kind of like, it seems like she's buying it, honestly. Like,
she was like, sounds good,
yeah,
I'm down,
seems like it'll work. But really, it's sort of like the Parvati and Boston Rob thing, where it's like Sarah's kind of like, honestly, I'm probably his only real good option, maybe Sandra, but maybe it'll work. And also, last time in Cops R Us, wasn't it part of Tony's first trajectory that people didn't know he was a cop?
Yeah. So it was,
but then he just started telling everyone. So well, now it's like, if people know you're both cops, this is a pretty obvious alliance still.
Well, I feel like if we're going to compare it to like Rob and Parvati, it would kind of be like Rob saying to Parvati, yeah, you remember that alliance I put together on the Villains Tribe? Why don't we do that again? But you're just in it this time, and I promise I'm not going to come after you. Right? Like,
yeah.
But Sarah says she wants to avoid being seen with him too much because people already see them as a pair. Tony does the classic sort of like, thing that the person does who just wants to be with somebody else, like, well, they already think it, so why bother hiding it, right? And so they solidify Cops R Us. Sarah says last time it was like she had a new partner and he turned out to be a crazy person, but now she knows him, and so she knows her partner, and as long as nobody else knows about them being together, then this can work. So I have a feeling that this is not going to remain a secret, nor do I think it even was a secret to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, people were lumping them together, like when you had Yule and when you had Sophie narrating last episode, like, you know, just she lumped together, what was it, Sarah, Tony, and Sandra,
yeah,
as the gritty group.
The gritty group.
I kind of wonder too, like, maybe this was just something that happened in the first few days and they've decided like it's going to be relevant really soon. So let's put in episode 2 instead of episode 1, you know?
Maybe.
I hope it's not relevant for the reasons of Tyson, or not Tyson, Tony getting voted out, but
that would be terrible. We need Tony to last as long as possible.
I know, he should be protected at all costs.
So we get to the immunity challenge, and Rob is going to see that Amber is gone. You can see the pain, the desire for vengeance in his eyes. He's scanning the other tribe, looking for who looks guilty, who did this, because this is war. But he keeps his, he doesn't say much. He just, hey, it's a game. It happens.
You could feel the anger. I loved that scene. Mm-hmm. And I was just, you know, he should have asked someone to take care of her. Like, clearly, right? He messed up.
It's all his fault, if you think about it.
Yeah.
All it would have taken was, look, if you can.
If you can, take care of her.
So we get into the challenge. It's pretty straightforward until they get to the puzzle. And I really loved this from Tony again. As they're doing the puzzle, he's like, hey, we gotta make them panic. We gotta make them panic. Just oh, yes, good job, yes. Make them panic. And then other people were joining it.
Just loud cheering from the other side.
You're doing so good.
That would bother me if I was like really trying to concentrate on this puzzle and people were yelling about how.
Yes, so good, Brayden. You're doing so well right now. I hope this isn't distracting.
Stop. Go away, Tony. But it's awesome content. Like, for Tony and like Sandra last episode when she sat out, just like they know that they want to just get the little TV moment. So, of course, Sandra has to say, like, yeah, hurry up, Tony. Like, eyes up here. You know, got to get your moment.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yes. So Rob is going to try an alternative strategy For the puzzle. He starts to try to organize the pieces before putting them together, and this is a disaster, and his tribe is going to lose here. He was behind to begin with, so who knows if they would have lost anyway, but it's still a losing strategy here. Rob, usually known for his puzzle abilities, I wonder if he was just a bit shaken by the fact that his wife was gone.
Yeah, I think it was kind of weird to have him there. He probably wanted to prove that, you know, he was useful to the tribe. Like, that was probably him being like, I got this. Like, I'll carry us through. Isn't that the right strategy, though, to put the puzzle together on the ground or something before you put it up?
I mean, I kind of thought it was going to work out, because how the puzzle worked is that you filled in the bottom portion, but then there are two side portions, and you can't just lay the piece down unless it's the bottom piece, because gravity will make it fall, right? So so you basically, if you're going to fit them all in one at a time, then you have to experiment and just try and fail to try to find the bottom piece. Whereas what he was trying to do, I think, is based on what he was saying, he was separating out the pieces into these are all on this side, these are all on this side. And then all he needed to do from there is find he only had four different pieces he needed to look for to get to if there are eight pieces total, which there are probably more, but you understand what I'm saying. Half the amount of pieces to look through to find the bottom piece. And then theoretically, it should move a lot faster. But I guess somewhere along the way here, something messed up and it didn't come together like it should have. Maybe the organizing process was flawed. I don't know what happened.
Flawed.
It's flawed.
The game was flawed. But I think that it was the right strategy. Just they kind of mess it up, and they were behind anyways. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, how many times can I reference Caitlin in an episode? You know, whenever you have a puzzle that there's gravity related to putting it together, you should probably try to put it together on the ground first and then just lift it up or recreate it.
Yeah.
But let's not go to that.
Hey, if it can happen to Boston Rob, then I think Caitlin has long since been vindicated.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. Easily, I think her legend watch will increase.
Yes. we're talking about Caitlin from Big Brother, who infamously failed at some puzzle solving. So Rob's tribe, Blue Tribe, has lost, and Parvati is going to let us know that a new schooler has to go. That she can't let them maintain a majority in the tribe. So a new schooler has to go. Ultimately, we're going to see that is not going to happen. So probably not great that this is Parvati's goal, because it's not going to pan out too well. We then get to Rob apologizing for his performance in the challenge. Today was not his best day. His wife is gone. He lost the challenge. And Ethan comes up to him and says, hey, you suck today. I really loved this from Ethan, because, like, at first I was like, oh, very obviously a joke. But then, like, it lingers. The camera goes to Ethan's face and he's still straight faced. And I was like, oh, this is a good joke. He's doing this joke well. And then, like, only then do they laugh after a little bit. Like, I was like, ah, that was good timing, Ethan.
Yeah.
You didn't back down too fast.
It shows, like, Ethan's just, I think he gets it. Like, he says what everyone's thinking. It's funny. Like, I think he's connecting, like, way more than I would have gave him credit for coming into the season.
Ethan is doing really well based on what we've seen. Really the star of the secret scenes, if you go and check those out, is some great ones with Ethan. So Rob tells us, you know what? Even though today was a bad day, I'm not worried. I feel secure with my relationships. And I want to send either Jeremy or Ben home. Jeremy's on the outs. We just sent home Natalie. Or Ben is a bit of a wild card. He wants to be seen as harmless, but he's dangerous. And so he's thinking about sending Ben home. Him, Ethan, and Parvati discuss which of the two they want to send home. But there's a catch here. that Danny is looking on, and she feels left out of this old school group. She thought that she was close to Parvati, but now Parvati's not talking to her anymore. And this is something that I've talked about a lot with Big Brother, because on Big Brother, we can watch the players in real time. We see the whole thing play out, so we know exactly what's happening in the game and why people lose their relationships like this. Basically, when you set a precedent in the relationship for the level of communication, you need to maintain that level of communication, or the other person is going to start to worry, especially when you're playing a game of paranoia. Now, there are, you know, if you really develop a bond, then you can sort of trust the person to communicate a little bit less. But if you start talking to somebody in the first couple of days a lot, and then the next couple of days, it's like you've dropped off a cliff and like, where is Parvati? How come we're not close anymore? Then that person is going to be pretty worried. Now, you would expect somebody who is a winner of the game, who played a very cool, calm, and collected game her first time around, would take it in stride, but seemingly not the case. And Danny is very concerned about her position on the tribe and within this group. And so she's going to make a case to Ethan and Ben for why she should stay in the game.
Yeah, it was sad. Like Danny, I feel like I just remember her being way more in control and like able to, you know, read the room. But it can also just be like the editing of like, oh, look at, there's like Rob, Parv, and Ethan down on the beach and Danny's looking on, you know, not in the cool kids club. I don't know. This is exactly like what you said. I would love to actually see it in real time if it just so happened that, you know, Danny happened to be walking over or was going for a swim, but had been hanging out with them all day anyways.
Yes. My good pal Hoodie in the chat with us as well. What's up, Hoodie? This is his first time watching Survivor, so hope you're enjoying it. This is a weird place to start, but hopefully a good one.
Yeah, then he's just gonna have to go and binge watch every, you know, every single season after this.
Well, he's basically spoiled half of the seasons immediately. Yeah. Right,
you just walk into any season and you're like, oh wait a second, that's someone I recognize, I guess they win.
So Danny is going to make her case to Ethan and Ben. And in the course of making the case for herself, she mentions, I was talking to Rob about, you know, old school sticking together. And Ben's like, wait, what? old school. This is exactly what I was worried about. Now, Ben sounds to me like the crazy conspiracy theorist who just found out that he was right all along. So I feel like Ben has been preaching this old school, new school thing, and everybody's been shutting him down to this point because he really sounds like somebody who's been treated like he's crazy and is now vindicated. He's like, this is exactly what I was saying. Why didn't nobody listen to me before? I knew it. He's like, hey, no, we're not going to get away from the subject. This is the thing. This is the thing.
Yeah. And Ethan just he says, you know who he is, right? Yeah. What, I don't know what his line was, but the deadpan again, I love Ethan.
You realize he's not, I mean, he played it like a couple of years ago.
You know, he's not old school strong with us.
Not that we're a thing. I mean, I don't even know what you're talking about, Danny, if you think about it, right? Like,
yeah, that was really not good.
Yeah. Ben says he does not want to be bamboozled by these old schoolers. So Ben is going to go pitch to Ethan, Jeremy, and Adam that, hey, we need to take out Danny. And again, I am surprised and impressed that Ethan is part of these conversations.
Yeah. Why is Ethan there? I was like, I expected Denise would be there. And it's just Ethan again. Yeah, it's a weird old school, new school thing. Hey, kids.
And Ethan seems like the most concerned with making sure that the old school thing does not become a thing. I think because he's probably the most the person who's moving the most in between the various groups. And so if he's outed as being an old schooler, that kind of blows his cover. So it seems that Ethan is doing really well here. Something that I thought was interesting about this conversation, I don't know if it was because Ethan was present and because of Ethan's influence to protect Rob, or if it was just genuinely how they feel in the tribe right now. But what Ben says is, obviously, we can't do Rob. We need Rob. So with that being said, should it be Danny? Which I was a little bit surprised about. You know, I think that there are a few different potential reasons for this. Either they think we need him in challenges, or they have some kind of idea that like he's a big target and they want to keep him around for a little while longer. As I said, Ethan is there. Maybe they don't fully trust Ethan or one of the people in this group to not run this back to Rob. And they're afraid of being the next Danny, of being exposed as having said Rob's name. And so, well, obviously, we're not taking out Rob, because if I say Rob's name, then he might come for me in my sleep with the horse head or something.
Yeah. So I guess what I didn't get, though, is that then why not Parvati? You know, like Danny is clearly going a little crazy and doesn't like the old schoolers anymore. So like for Ben to say Danny first instead of Parvati, maybe it's just they cut it out for ease of us watching, but it's kind of weird. They skipped over Parv.
It is interesting. I don't really know why. I mean, obviously we're going to get to them considering Parv as an option. But I don't know why she wasn't initially an option here. That seems to me to point more toward the idea that they're not saying Rob's name because they're worried, more so than because they feel like they need him in challenges. Because this is how Rob has always played the game, especially how he played it in Redemption Island, where the second somebody even comes close to mentioning his name as a target, it's all out war. And so the second that happened in the first episode, he immediately found it out. He confronted Danny. He shut it down. And since that time, nobody seems to have ever mentioned his name as a potential target. And it seems that what we hear from Adam a little bit later on is that he's, by extension, worried about going after Parvati because Parvati is attached to Rob and he doesn't want to go against Rob right now, right? And so I think that it is, again, this sort of, it is Rob's style of gameplay, this sort of intimidation style, mafia boss style, where he tries to intimidate people into not even being willing to say his name. And I do wonder if part of that is rubbing off onto Parvati. I do also wonder if Parvati herself has some other social connections, like the one she seems to have with Denise, that are also helping her out here that we're just not seeing either. And I would not put that past Parvati as well, because she is equally as good at this game, seemingly, as Rob. So them together, on one hand, it's incredibly surprising that they're not considered as targets. And on the other hand, it's like, well, they are probably two of the best players to ever play, so there's probably a reason that they're not considered as targets, right? So it's hard to know. Chicken the egg.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I think Danny, probably what we don't see is Danny's probably just doesn't have a great connection with any of them at this point. Like, she seems a little bit on the outs overall.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed like she pulled in a little bit by Rob, but clearly did not feel very comfortable, which is so weird because Danny played the entire post-merge on the bottom when she won, and she's totally like cool the entire time, but I don't know what happened here. So Danny is going to then go to Rob and pitch to him that they need to take out Parvati. And this completely shocked me, because it tells me that Rob is really doing a good job of maintaining those. Like, when he said, "I trust in my relationships," I was like, okay. But when Danny decides Rob is the person she's going to go to pitch to take out Parvati, I was just like, why does she trust him to do this? And then when he says, "You know what? I'm in." And she gives him like this look of just like puppy dog. And she's telling him, "I will be completely yours." And she's just like so pleased that he's on board, but he's lying to her. I was just like, this is terrible. This is not the Danny that I expected to see.
Yeah. I mean, she basically blows up her alliance to people not in her alliance, and then goes to her alliance to vote out more of her alliance. Like, it just, I don't know. It was bad. And then she's just, well, I think she's probably just trying to slide into where she perceives Parvati at, right? Like, she wants to slide into the right hand man for Rob, but not going to happen.
Yeah. So Rob is going to let Ethan and Adam know about Danny's pitch. Says that he's good to vote out Danny now. And Adam's like, Well, that's great for me. Send Danny home. Although, you know, if I had my choice, I mean, I wouldn't mind Parvati going out, actually. That wouldn't be a bad thing for me either. Problem is, Rob is the godfather, and going against him is very dangerous. So it's about picking your moment. Ethan, of course, is going to let Parvati know about Danny's pitch as well. And it seems like the pawns are being lined up. Everything's being lined up. It seems that Danny is the pick here. I wasn't particularly fooled by the edit here, trying to be like, oh, it might be Parvati. Sometimes I'm very fooled. This time I felt like it wasn't particularly convincing. But the stakes are so high that I was still like a little bit nervous. what if Parvati goes home? But we're going to see Jeremy and Michelle considering their options. They can either go with the plan, which is something they get something they want, which is an old schooler going home. I imagine this seems to be what they want, or they can flip things up. I do like that Jeremy and Michelle seem to be a pair. We saw that Jeremy and Natalie seem to be some kind of trio. And Parvati actually said in her voting confessional that she thought Natalie was the glue that held Jeremy and Michelle together. Seemingly not the case, because they seem to both still be together. Jeremy tells us that he likes to be the one in control. So he doesn't like that he's having to follow somebody else's plan. He's wondering if this is the time to step up and take control.
Yeah, Jeremy and Adam kind of had like a similar confessional, basically saying, is it the right time? And I mean, you can kind of tell by the way they're saying it that like when you know there could be swaps right away, you don't want to get a large group of people mad at you. You know, Danny seems like a good go with the flow option, right? Mm-hmm. That's like that was sort of the like under like the context to me of what they were saying was, yeah, well,
I think it's a harder choice. When it's Danny or Parvati, I think it's an easier choice if it's Ben or Parvati, right? Like if they lose Ben, then old schooler to new schooler is now even. And theoretically that could be an issue. And it appears that, that Brayden has been voted out of, his abode. Because it's Danny, they're kind of already getting something that they want. And so I think there's less incentive to shake things up because they're already in a not as bad position here. Adam tells us that he knows where the idol is, so they can just vote Parv out right now. And he knows that he will never win the game if he doesn't take the right risks at the right time. So I thought this was all very interesting, and I think it's definitely an interesting thing to consider. Do they make the right call ultimately here? Should they switch to vote out Parvati, or should they go along with the Danny vote out? And I think that what I imagine is going through their heads right now when they're trying to make this decision between Danny and Parv is, if we do flip and vote out Parvati, then we need to trust at least one of Danny or Ben to be with us in the next vote. Because in the next vote, there's going to be 8 people and there's only 4 of them. Adam, Denise, Jeremy, and Michelle. We know that Adam doesn't particularly trust Ben. He thinks he's a wild card. Ben could easily flop over to a weakened Rob, who is a very still very effective player who will now be on the warpath. And then you have Danny, who just went to Rob with this plan, certainly might be upset and betrayed if he doesn't go along with it, but still has that connection and could easily come back to him now that Parvati's actually gone and actually take that place, which she seemingly seemed to want to. So I think there are some risks there that that you might not actually have a hold on the tribe if you do this. Not to mention, as you pointed out, Brayden, there could be a swap coming up pretty soon, and losing the allegiance of like, you know, a good portion of your tribe could put you in a really bad spot if you get swapped onto a tribe with them. So I think they probably make the right call ultimately, but at the same time, it's Parvati. Like, do you really want to leave Parvati in the game?
That's exactly it. It's like, Parvati just seems like the type of person that can claw their way through anything. So, and even just like not voting at Rob just because he's intimidating, like, I just get him out because he's the type of guy that could somehow just run after the merge with, you know, a group of loyal followers.
honestly, I think it shouldn't have been Parv. I think it should have been Rob. I think that's, you have to just strike at the head. And no, I don't think that Rob is necessarily going to win this game. I think his path there is still so difficult. But there's a time and a place to leave a big target in the game, right? Like, Rob is not a big target. Rob is not a Tony, even. Like, Rob is not a Rachel Riley from Big Brother. Like, Rob is not some figurehead that is going to attract attention and eventually be taken out, because obviously he'll be taken out. Rob is a player where the more room you give him, the more runway you give him, the harder it will be to take him out later, because he is going to set things up in a way where he is insulated and going to do very well. And so I think the more time they give him to prepare, the harder things might be. And when they go to take him down, they might find themselves on the wrong end of a vote, and that might end up weakening Rob, and he'll be taken out by somebody else, but they're the ones that are going to fail there. So I really feel like you got to take him out.
And Jeremy to me is the one with the most information, and he's the one who I think has made, you know, maybe the biggest mistake to not try to make it happen, because he says, you know, he's got Natalie there, she's sending him advantages, he knows Amber's on that edge of extinction, so naturally Rob is probably going to be starting to get advantages sent to him in the near future. He has the information that the most recent advantage went to himself. So Amber has had no chance to give Rob one, like an idol or advantage. It's like, this is the time to do it now before maybe Amber finds some awesome idol to give to Rob.
But, yeah.
You know, alas.
and to be clear, Rob is a big target, but I think the difference between Rob and a normal big target is that Rob is a big target and incredibly dangerous the longer you leave him alone. So that's where I really feel like this is, it's potentially a mistake to leave him untouched here. But you gotta do what you gotta do. We get to the tribal, and Adam is gonna have some trouble sticking his torch in the hole. And I think I read that this also happened in the first tribal, but they didn't show it.
Yeah, I'm sure it's just an ongoing thing at this point.
Now, there has been some speculation that Adam has talked about intentionally doing some dumb things in order to make people think of him as less of a threat, less of a target. That's that he pointed out some times that he did that in his previous season when he won, like, oh, I'm just going to drink this water, even though I shouldn't. And then people are like, no. And then they don't see him as smart. So there has been some speculation that this may have been on purpose. A bit of a like, oh, man, what a gaffe. I don't even know how to put my torch in right, guys. I actually like, normally I feel like that kind of speculation, it's a little unfounded, it's a little conspiratorial, but I actually feel like this is possible. I feel like it's not out of the realm of possibility here.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put it past him. He's a smart guy. He's like, you know, he thinks about this stuff all the time. So little things like that, doing it over and over, people start to see him as, you know, the court jester or whatever, and keep him around.
Mm-hmm. I love that Jeff asks Rob, hey, what's the state of the game? Because that is a segment on the Big Brother Roundtable podcast. State of the game. Rob says, hey, it's about relationships. The game is about relationships. And Danny says, hey, I played a very loyal game with great alliances the first time around. I thought I had that here, but clearly I don't. This gets a big reaction from Parvati, who seemingly for the second time in a row in tribal has a bit of a gaffe and mentions the old school people in conversation, and Ben again is like, ah, there it is again. It's like he sees something that nobody else sees. Like it's, you know, the Twilight Zone episode on the plane. He's looking out. He's like, there's a thing there. It's an old schooler. I'm telling you. And they look out the window and they're like, what are you talking about, Ben? He's like, no, she just said it. No. Do you hear them? And then they're so good at deflecting too. There's like, they immediately, like, Ben is again just completely out of his depth when it comes to like just social interactions here. And I love Ben much more so than most people, it seems. But they are just like, Ben, what are you talking about? Why are you so paranoid? I'm not paranoid. You're paranoid. No, Ben, you're being so paranoid. I mean, do you feel like there are old schoolers versus new schoolers? I mean, weren't we talking? It's like, well, yeah, we're talking. I mean, like, is there a new school thing? No. Of course it's not a new school thing. I mean, I was talking to you. I went off with you and I went off with you. Exactly. We were all going off with each other. So what are you talking about? Why are you being so paranoid? How did this turn around on me? What happened here?
We're all paranoid. Yeah, at first he wasn't paranoid, then everyone else was paranoid, and now they're all paranoid. It just, by the end of that little segment, there was no point. They didn't come to any conclusion or remember what they were talking about.
Well, it's just classic, like, obfuscation, right? Like, he's pointing out something that's harmful and true, and instead of, like, there's not really a good defense against it, so instead of actually making a case, they just try to make it, like, muddy the waters and confuse the talking points until nobody's sure what they're even saying anymore.
Yeah, and then Rob, like, after that exchange, Rob, like, leans over to Jeremy, which I thought was really interesting, mm-hmm. and he's just like, it's like, oh, he's crazy or something.
Yeah, there's some whispering going on that seems to be fairly commonplace now in the two tribals that they've been to so far. Ben is going to mention idols, and look, here's the thing. I'm not even going to find. I'm just willing to help people find idols. And Rob immediately reads. He's like, "So who has an idol?" I have nothing to say about that. Let's open our backs. Let's open them up right now. Again, with the mafia style gameplay here. And they just all start opening their bags right away, except for Adam, who's like, "Whoa, hey, this is ridiculous. What?"
So what do you think? They must have both had their thing there, right? Like, did they show Denise take hers out mm-hmm. and, like, hide it? I mean, like, so lucky that they were sitting at that spot of the bench, yeah. right? Because if they were in the middle, they'd just be like, oh, here's a thing. Like, I don't know what they would have done.
Right. It's Kennedy in the chat says, Rob getting everyone to dump their bags reminded me of Dan Giesling / Dr. Will from Big Brother. Those are the two Big Brother legends, so to speak. And it's definitely something that I could see happening there from them, that they get people to do ridiculous things. Yeah. Honestly, far, far more ridiculous than opening their bags at Tribal.
Start a fast next week.
Yes.
On the island.
So they all open up their bags. This is the one thing from Adam that I did not love in the episode, which was the obvious defensiveness here. I think that there's a case to be made that, you know, it is ridiculous that he's getting everyone to open their bags, and it should be defended against. But when he's the only one and everybody else is just very willingly like, oh, yeah, here. Absolutely. And he's like, hey, this isn't good. Why do you deserve to know who has idols? So, of course, Rob's like, do you have an idol, Adam? Well, no.
When they had that shot, like, the sight line of Rob was, like, directly at Adam and Denise. And I was just thinking, like, man, like, he might have saw just, like, Denise's sort of look. And she was being weird. Like, she was, like, slowly and turning away. Everyone else just dumped their bag out. I don't know. Denise had no... The one thing I did notice, Denise didn't talk. It was the only person that didn't talk that whole tribal.
Denise played it very cool.
Yeah, quiet, calm, and collected.
Yeah. So Adam says, look, I'm not about idols. I'm about relationships. Relationships are important, Rob. That's a thought completely my own. I like that. And Parvati says right before the vote as she's voting, I hope this is the right risk to take, which I thought was a great sort of parallel to the fact that we heard from Jeremy and Adam talking about, is this the right risk to take out Parv? Parv is saying, I hope it's the right risk to take out Danny. I don't know what that indicates, but it was a cool parallel.
I mean, what was her other option? I wonder, like, you think they would have turned on Ben because they wouldn't have had the numbers? Like,
I don't know.
I think they just didn't have an option.
It seems as though it was the right risk to take, because if it wasn't Danny, it might have been part.
Yeah, exactly.
So Dani is in fact voted out. She's going to bequeath her token to Denise, which seemed kind of random.
Yeah, I think it was just a case of Denise is the nicest one to her. That's kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. I think Danny's probably just kind of on the outs with everyone, pissed off at old schoolers, and says, Denise is the nicest. Screw the rest of you.
Yeah.
But so, she might keep the strategy from us. Like, we'll maybe never know.
We did there were a couple of secret scenes that I thought were interesting here. One was with Parvati and Ethan. They were talking about what to say when Dani comes and asks us who we're voting out, because we're voting her out. Ethan, I felt, hamming it up here, is like, oh man, I don't know what I'll do. I just want to be honest. And Parvati's like, oh, Ethan, you just want to be honest to everyone. This is a great scene. I recommend everyone watch it. They ended up role playing. Parvati pretends to be Dani, and she's like, hey, Ethan, I just wondering what the plan is. And Ethan's like, it's great. It's a great scene.
I haven't seen this scene.
Oh, you need to watch it. It's great.
Great role play of role playing.
Those two together are fantastic. I hope we see more of them in the episodes. There's also a secret scene for the tree mail that they get on the tribe that actually was sneakily like a Rob confessional secret scene where Rob talks about how he is positioning his pawns so that he will be able to strike effortlessly. He's trying to set himself up for a deep run and he's got options. I was very interested to hear this from Rob because based on what we see, it seems like he's kind of in a corner, but he seems to think that he's got a lot more options than we are seeing in the show right now. And I'm very curious to know who he sees as his pawns and what kind of options he feels he has at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder, like, because you see scenes where Rob has, like, people around him, like Jeremy and Ben and, you know, like, Adam and Denise sometimes, but, like, he's probably wrong, right? Unless maybe he has pawns on the other side.
I'm really curious. Now, granted, this is before the immunity challenge, so it's before the Dani thing probably happened. So maybe he sees just like the three of his old schoolers as his main pawns, and maybe he has a different outlook after the Dani thing happened. But I would love for Boston Rob to be able to release a "this is what I was planning and thinking at this time." Hopefully, we'll find out at some point.
Yeah. Well, for Rob to say, you know, I'm not sort of playing with house money type of thing. Like, I've actually got myself set up for a long run. Pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Because that's not what I would expect, or that's not what I'd be feeling if I was in his shoes.
Yes. Kathy wants to know where we find these extra scenes. You can find them on the CBS website, under the extras. There are some secret scenes there. I generally won't discuss the preview. Alexander's asking about the preview, mostly because I feel like it's usually not really indicative of anything factual. If you guys really want me to discuss the preview, I'm perfectly willing to, but I usually don't find it holds much of any interest, to be honest. It's like we could go over about how Adam's like, oh, Adam's ready to strike Boston Rob, but in actuality he was talking about like Ben, right? Like, who knows?
Yeah. There were no names said.
It was right?
Random non sequiturs and a shark.
All right. So that was the episode. I thought it was not quite as good as the premiere. Granted, the premiere is kind of two episodes, but still good. I mean, it's still great cast, great strategy happening. I just do feel like there was the ratio of like strategic and social gameplay to like scavenger hunt idol advantage talk was a little off here.
The bad ratio.
Yeah, bad ratio.
I have a question for you though. After this, like at this point in the game, on each tribe, who, like, if you could go into one person's sort of position in the game, who do you want to be? Like, if you go to Decal, the red tribe, do you want to be like a Sophie or a Ewell? Like, what's the optimal position on each tribe right now?
I would say Sophie is in the best position in the game. Because, well, but it depends, right? Like, am I transferring into Sophie's body, or am I like just like overriding Sophie with me?
With okay, my body? I mean, I didn't think that far into the the question. I feel like if you transferred into Sophie and it was still you, it would be very similar gameplay anyway.
Well, so yeah, but people would perceive me differently.
Oh my god. Okay. You're controlling.
I think part of why Sophie's in such a great spot is because she's next to Yule, who is just overall always going to be more threatening than Sophie. So I think Sophie's in a really great spot. I think Ethan is in a decent spot. It seems like nobody's going to be coming for him anytime soon. If anybody does take a shot at the old schoolers, it should be at Parvati or Boston Rob first at this point. So he should be good for a little while. I don't know about his end game at this point, whereas Sophie seems pretty well insulated. So I would say Sophie seems to be in the best game position. Yule's definitely in a good one as well, but I think he's a little more visible than she is.
Yeah, but speaking of being visible, Yule didn't have any real confessional tonight. I mean,
apart from the breadfruit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, well, they kind of kept him in there to show him with Kim and to remind us he's there, but it's a bit of a bummer, you know? Sophie got the big confessionals.
There you go. All right, so let's move on to the Legacy Watch.
Yes.
Right. All right. So here it is. We've got it up here. This is, I believe this is where we left it the last time. But over the last week, I have put out some surveys so that people can let us know how they actually see the tiers for the legacies of the winners. So we have some actual data to work with instead of just like trying to guess what other people might think and all of that stuff. So hopefully this will be a little more fun. If you're watching along on YouTube, you can see the visual. If not, we will describe what it looks like, what we're looking at here as we go. So I want to put this into first, where the audience told me they saw the winners prior to the season starting, right? So they had Parvati at number one in the legend tier. They had Sandra at number two in the legend tier. They had Rob at number three in the legend tier and Kim at number four in the legend tier. Then they had Yule at the top of the top tier. Tony following him, then surprisingly for me, being such a Tyson stan, I think my bias went in the wrong direction here. I overcompensated. They actually put Tyson up in the top tier, just behind Tony. Then they had Jeremy.
People with their recency bias on Tyson, come on.
Oh boy. Shots fired.
I'm a Tyson middle stan. I have people that I stan more out here. I think Tyson's the funniest, though. It's just, top tier. I don't know.
All right. Well, they had Jeremy. Following Jeremy was Natalie, followed by Wendell, and then Sarah and Denise, not in the top tier, like I thought. Denise and Tyson were basically flipped, but apart from that, we were pretty close. In the middle tier, we had Ethan at the top, followed by Denise, then Sophie, then Adam, then Nick, and then Danny. And then in the bottom tier, we had Michelle, followed by Amber, and then Ben down at the bottom. That's how people saw the winners heading into the season, Braden.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I can't believe people are so high on Tyson, as per usual. I have to knock him down. And it was when, so did we have Wendell in the top tier when you guys made it last week with Mary?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that makes sense. I think the only thing I'm surprised about from the audience is that Denise gets shaken down so far. Like, I thought
that surprised me too. Game.
I don't know. I'm a Denise and Sophie. Like, those are the two that I kind of want to get the second win and just be like other queens, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want a guy to take the two win crown.
So
another queen with
Well, yeah, that's the, you know, that's not something I'd considered before. If a guy wins this season, then are we going to be looking at the king and queen of Survivor?
Exactly. And really, because then you can say, well, this is the only two-time male winner and the only two-time female winner, and you separate them. But I like it to be, you know, co-queens just ruling, and, you know, they can each wear a crown. It's great.
All right. Well, let's look at where the audience said how the premiere changed their perspective on the winners. So we have Parvati still at the top in the legend tier, but we did get Rob actually moving up past Sandra for the number two spot after seeing the premiere, which I think, you know, we saw some pretty great stuff from Rob.
Yeah, rightfully so.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people discredit his win in Redemption Island because they said his level of competition was so low. And now we're seeing probably what is the highest level of competition imaginable, and he's still doing very well. So I have to imagine that is going to further solidify his legacy.
He has missed. Like, I don't know what it is. It's intimidation mixed with, like, charm. Like, I just don't... I've never met him in person, but I can see how that translates. He killed it. He just killed it the first episode.
Yeah. After Sandra in the legend tier is actually Yule, who moved up from the top tier into the legend tier following the premiere.
Wow.
People were very impressed by Yule. Now, granted, he was already at the top of the top tier. He was already primed to enter legend tier. But it was, in fact, enough for Yule to enter legend tier, and he jumps over Kim.
I think that's the right move, audience, to give Yule the bump up, you know, to come back when everyone says it's such a different game, and for him to have that level of, you know, control and like foresight and, you know, ability to move a target. Legendary.
So one of the things I'm really interested in is that I expect that we're going to see big jumps following each episode, but then over the course of the following episodes, we'll see things start to kind of normalize. So I'm very curious to see how this goes further on. So after the premiere, we saw Kim actually fall, and we did predict this, from the legend tier down into the top tier below Tony. Actually, Tony is now the new king of the top tier Survivor winners.
Wow. I mean, actually, and Tony had a good episode, like, to sort of be in his little group and to not go crazy. So, well, deserved.
Yeah. After Kim was Tyson, followed by Jeremy. And then we got to Natalie, who I did predict would fall to the middle tier, much to the chagrin of many people, including myself. And that is what we saw. Natalie did fall into the middle tier. So she's going to be down there. Wendell followed Jeremy now. And then after Wendell was actually Ethan, who was bumped up from the middle tier after the premiere.
Ooh.
Yeah. After Ethan.
Go off of
that. Right. After Ethan was Sophie, who also got bumped up to the top tier after the premiere episode. And then Sarah, actually, who was kind of straddling the bottom of the top tier, did actually fall to the middle tier after the premiere episode. At the top of the middle tier, but down there. After Sarah is Denise, followed by Adam, followed by Natalie. And then Danny actually overtook Nick in the middle tier after the premiere. And then at the bottom tier, we actually did see Ben surpass Amber after Amber was the second person voted out of the game.
So she is the least legendary winner now. Well, Ben is in a great position, you know, as far as the legend watch, because he just starts at the bottom.
Right.
He has nobody to disappoint. And, you know, as people keep screwing up, like, people are going to get voted out and he's going to, you know, start looking good.
All right. So now we get to the real meat of this. We're all caught up after watching this week's episode of Survivor Winners at War. Do you want to try and make predictions first, or should we just kind of run through it and discuss? I think we should run through it and discuss. That's what we should do.
Sure.
So at the top in the legend tier, Rob continues his climb and has overtaken Parvati. Rob is now rated number one legend in Survivor by the audience after this episode of Survivor. That's interesting. I mean, we're definitely seeing a lot of content from Rob, a lot of great stuff, again, solidifying a lot of what he did in the past as well as what's happening right now. I do think that we're seeing some great stuff from Parvati, but we're seeing a little less of Parvati, and you know, there is an argument to be made that what happened with Danny was a little bit of a mistake here with Parvati, that Danny was upset with Parv and she ended up going to Rob as the person that she wanted to make a move with because she was upset with Parvati. Seems as though Parvati did drop the ball at least a little bit with Danny.
Yeah, that makes sense to me because Rob is sort of the go-to person for anyone on his tribe at this point. He's sort of like the most like trustworthy of the winners. He's just got something. So yeah, push Rob to the front.
We then have Sandra still up there, number three on the legend tier. We then saw after this week's episode, Yule did fall back down to the top tier, out of the legend tier. He had a brief moment in the sun.
Well, come on. We don't know what he's doing over there. We just didn't get to see it, you guys. We need to release the tweet.
this is what I'm finding interesting, right? That he had a good episode. He got bumped up. And then one episode later, things are kind of normalizing again. We didn't see as much of him and out of people's minds. This is what's so interesting to me about the Legacy Watch is that it's not necessarily about what's deserved. It's about the perception. And it's kind of like a merry-go-round where it's like when it stops, like that's going to be locked in. Right? Yeah. Kind of. So so right now, you're back into the top tier.
Okay, well, you know, we'll give him another episode. He's going to do something, say something really smart, and, you know, we'll all put him in the legend tier again.
all right. After Yule, still Tony. Tony has not fallen far here. Then after Tony, we have Tyson surpassing Kim. Tyson now above Kim. I have to imagine that, again, having another episode where for a second I thought, okay, Kim's making a comeback. Then Sophie talks to us in confessional and it's like, oh no, it's another bad episode for Kim. Kim seems to be in free fall right now.
Yeah, honestly, and just the mistakes from the first episode and this episode, I would say she'd almost have to drop more, but we'll keep her in that top tier.
Well, she is still dropping more because Jeremy also is going to jump Kim, and Kim is going to land there behind Jeremy. So both Tyson and Jeremy up above Kim. Could you imagine right now? This is crazy to me right now. Above Kim Spradlin is Jeremy, Tyson, Tony, Yule. That's nuts. I never would have imagined that, to be honest.
Yeah. And I wonder if, you know, once we have some time away from this, right, we would maybe readjust. But Kim, that's what happens with one-time players, right? Like, because you look at everyone ahead of Kim, with the exception of Yule, who's just amazing, and they are all people that, you know, have gotten to prove themselves more than once, mm-hmm, right?
I have a feeling that the people who have played more will be more steady in where they are just because there's more data to work with. So as we get new data, the impact will be less, right?
Yeah. Oh, poor Kim. Okay.
All right. After Kim is Sophie, who is going to jump both Ethan and Wendell. Woo! Climbing the ladder. Tony's ladder.
Yeah. I'm a Sophie stan. She's going to keep moving up. I'm calling it right now. Move her into legend status. Give her the win.
Certainly seems that way. and you know what? I think probably deserved. She seems to be doing, like I said, I think she's in the best spot in the game right now. She seems to be handling it very well. I'm very interested to see Sophie's trajectory. I could see Sophie as the winner of this season.
Me too. Yeah. I mean, I don't like to read the edits if I can, but I mean, like,
yeah, we're pretty edit.
Editless content, let's just say.
And like, editless content here.
What we said about on the other tribe, it's like, Rob is the person that someone went to when they were feeling low or whatever. And just on this tribe, Sophie was the person that Kim went to. So she's obviously doing something to just generally give out a vibe.
Yeah.
That Kim followed that vibe.
And for those that are like, hey, it's just been a couple episodes. Well, yeah, of course. That's all we have to work on. As soon as we get more episodes, I promise there'll be more content.
Pretty cool to get, you know, once we get to the end of the season, one of those graphics that goes like over the episodes over time and you see the people moving up and down.
I think that'll be very interesting. I look forward to it.
Somebody in the chat, do that graphic at the end of the season. Cool.
All right. So after Sophie in the top tier is actually Ethan, who is going to also jump over Wendell. Ethan still making moves. Like what they see.
Nice. He's in a good position.
Interestingly, we see Wendell actually fall from the top tier to the middle tier. Top of the middle tier, but it is a bit of a fall. I don't think he's doing anything wrong. He just wasn't in the episode.
Yep.
I don't know why Wendell fell here. I mean, he was always low in the top tier. But so I guess just a little bit of putting, you know, a little bit of not being there. Was enough to drop him down.
Yeah. All he did was talk about Tony's ladder, so.
He didn't help make the ladder.
He didn't help make the ladder.
I don't think, like, I feel like this is sort of normal variance here, more than an actual movement. He, like I said, he straddles the line between top and middle, even like normally. So I think we could easily see him in the top tier again next week, even if we still don't see any more of him. So after Wendell is Sarah, still down in the middle tier, has not been able to get back into the top tier based on what we've seen in this episode. And I don't know. I mean, I think that we didn't see anything bad from her this season yet. You know, if people thought she was top tier heading in, I don't think we've necessarily seen anything that disqualifies her from that. But people haven't particularly loved what they've seen so far.
Yeah, it's whatever. She's going back to Tony, doing what she can.
Yeah. After Sarah is Adam, who is going to hop over Denise there, which feels very appropriate to me, given how we saw things play out in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, Adam was kind of getting most of the content between the two of them. But Denise, like, she's the, I guess they both have an idol, and that's what people are looking at. So,
yeah, I mean, I think the scene where Denise says, let's give it to Parv, and Adam's like, no, that's a terrible idea. And then says, hey, I convinced her to give it to me. The edit to me is very clearly pointing to Adam is the strategic force in this partnership. Again, whether that's true or not, it seems like that is how things are being portrayed. And therefore, Adam seems to be getting a lot of the credit, and he has now surpassed Denise on the tier list.
Yeah. I honestly do think, like, Adam, an underappreciated winner at times. So if he keeps making moves and maybe gets out Rob or something, maybe he's more of a top tier player. I don't know.
I have been, and I said this before, but I have been very impressed with how Adam has played so far. He got in with Denise, who is a great person to work with. She is very loyal. She only betrays Malcolm because he said that he was going to cut her. So she's a great person to have on your side. Clearly willing to sort of like she's not like strong headed. She's not going to be stubborn about wanting to make a certain move. When Adam says it's a terrible idea to give the idol to Parv, she's like, okay, I agree. What do you think I should do? I think Denise was a great person for him to latch onto, and then after getting the vote off of himself and onto Natalie in the first episode, he's now in a position where he could have swung the vote against Parvati, decided not to, with I think fair reasoning, and I'm very, very interested to see how his game moves from here.
Yeah, he's positioning himself really well in a season of all winners and with people that are level-headed and smart, so move him up the tiers.
So yes, after Adam is Denise. She hasn't fallen too far. And then Natalie, still there in the middle tier, pretty solidly and not particularly high. Then we have Nick at the bottom of the middle tier, jumping over Danny. Nick was invisible in this episode. I didn't see a single bit of him except for when he walked up with Tony.
You walked up and hung out with Tony. That's it.
Yeah. So no room to grow here for Nick quite yet. Then we get to the bottom tier. And in the bottom tier, we have Michelle, number one. No real movement here. Still haven't seen much from Michelle. Michelle followed by Ben, who's number two in the bottom tier.
Is Danny moved yet? Or
Danny is one of the last two to go. So we've got Amber left and we've got Danny left.
Mm-hmm.
And Danny did, in fact, fall to last place in the bottom tier. Quite a fall from grace for Danny over the course of these few episodes. And I've got to say, you know, Danny was a winner who did not really show much in her season, right? And I think a lot of respect for Danny has come from after the fact that she talked about that she intentionally did not tell the producers of the show what she was doing in confessional because she was worried that it would get out and that her plans would be ruined. And so she didn't, as Rob has said on the Know-It-Alls and as she was first quoted as saying, she wasn't under the radar. She beat the radar, she said. And I was actually on the podcast where we talked about Danny playing on this season. And what I said was, you know, I give her the benefit of the doubt, right? Like, okay, you say you did these things. Sure. I have no reason to doubt you. There's a lot that we don't see on Survivor. But here's a chance to back it up, right? Here's a chance to see, is Danny all talk or is she the real deal? And it does appear that she has failed to live up to the expectations that were set by a lot of the things that were said. Now, I do want to be fair here. I have seen Danny on social media saying once again that, hey, the edit was misleading. There was a lot of stuff you didn't see. That I was never really a part of the old school alliance, and they made it look worse than it actually was. If that's true, I do feel for her. But for me, this is the second time. You know, at some point, I need to see something, and so unfortunately, I do kind of agree that she has fallen a bit here.
Yeah, I think that she's got to be pushed down, which is sad, like for her. Because she was always sort of a mystery, right? Like, I think even when you first discussed where she would go, you said, you know, some hardcore fans might put her higher, you know, top tier or something. And now here she is, she's behind Ben. And, you know, not to rail on Ben, but I feel like it kind of sucks if you're looked at as less legendary of a winner than Ben. Hopefully they're not, you know, I don't want to hate on anyone too much, but. Yeah, that she clearly just like made a few mistakes. Obviously, I'm sure people slip up all the time that win these seasons and they just don't show it because it doesn't become relevant to the vote out or anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it just made her look so bad. Like, she just kind of didn't know how to make connections. She's not seen as like someone that's strong in challenges. She's not socially, like, she just wasn't all there. Like, not looking good.
Not looking good. You know, luckily, she's still on Extinction. She still has a chance to recover here. She could be a great character on Extinction. She could come back into the game and redeem herself in some way. But I would not hold my breath, to be honest. I feel like, you know, they did certainly not shy away from really showing her flaws in this episode. So I would not particularly expect a big comeback here.
Yeah, I have a feeling we're not going to see her, you know, put up a big fight on Extinction Island. And she's probably kind of done with it at that point.
She did post like a song of some sort making fun of herself, which is pretty fun. So check out Danny on Instagram.
Okay, I will go look for that. Hopefully it doesn't make her fall further down.
I think it was great. I think she's I feel like Dany is just like really good at just like being online, she obviously won, so she's good on Survivor too, to some degree, but I think she's just a very good, just like she's very good at being cool.
A self-aware,
I don't know what I'm saying.
Self-aware queen. I don't know. I mean, I loved Dany. I had way higher expectations for her. Like, she was one that I was really, really excited about coming in. So, yeah, it sucks to see her like have an episode like this and go home.
Yeah.
But I mean, if Parvati goes home in an episode like this, to all of you, fickle people in the polls. Like, I think if Parvati got sent home, everyone would just excuse her and she would still be in, legend tier, maybe behind Sandra.
Yeah, well, like, I think, like I said, when Parvati has played, three times, this is her fourth time playing, and she's done very well all three times, the first three times, and then she doesn't do well this time. It's like, well, that's more excusable than somebody who did well once and then comes back and, there's less data to pull from. So we're a little less sure about where they stand.
I guess that makes sense. So then we have our variability of Kim and Dany and our tracker.
Exactly. Yeah.
So pickle with them.
Working on a new Stockwatch formula for Big Brother coming up, and that's same concept actually.
Wow. Maybe a BB Can thing too.
Yes.
Oh, good. Super solid.
Hopefully have a website ready for it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, this Stockwatch has really evolved since the first inception.
All right. someday, maybe coming to Survivor. Who knows? All right. So that's what we have for you for this week on for Survivor. I have now updated you. You've been updated to the new version Survivor versions of software. I don't know. It's a robot thing.
Okay.
Yeah,
we're 2.0 now. Great.
Exactly. Brayden, where can people find you if they want to see you sing songs?
You can just go to Twitter. Brayden with a B is my Twitter handle. Don't find me anywhere else. It's fine. If you need legal work in Canada, just look up my name.
Well, as a legal expert, do you think that there was a ladder clause?
No. Hell no. They probably just have a big, Survivor doesn't matter what you do. You fall off the back of a boat, smash your head, fall in the fire, whatever. That's your problem. You're coming out here to win $1 million, sign your life away.
All right. Well, make sure you find me on Twitter at Armstrong Taren. You can also find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/TarenArmstrong. Thinking about if you guys want to check out Twitch, that a lot of people don't like the edit talk, but in the past I've gone on Twitch to talk about my thoughts on the edit, I don't know, it's honestly not that, I'm not like an edgic person. I just think and I listen to the voices in my head as I walk back and forth. It's kind of a prayer of sorts, but it usually gets me where I need to go.
Yeah, you got to watch the vibes of the edit, right?
Yeah. So find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/TarenArmstrong. And I'll probably be live tomorrow with Lita. Maybe we'll talk about Survivor then. Who knows? So check that out. And thank you for joining us. Make sure you are on the lookout for the survey next week. After the episode airs, I will immediately post the survey and you will be able to fill in the updated tier rankings based on that episode. So be prepared. Follow me on Twitter. Find it all. Thank you so much for joining me. Next week, I am hoping to have a winner of Big Brother Canada, actually, on the podcast with me. Kevin Martin, hopefully, should be joining me. So should be a lot of fun. Thank you guys. And see you next time.
Yeah, Taren's back to give you deeds again. He's digging deep on Survivor to find you everything you need. So if your life is packed, let Taren and his friends break down the episode beyond what the casual see. Hey.